Hello, everyone. Welcome to the No Code SaaS podcast with myself, Glenn, and we've got Kieran here and James. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. So we'll start with the usual introduction. I'm going to volunteer James to go first to say what you do, James.
Cool. So hello. Yeah, I'm James Devenport. I run a SaaS business called UserLoop. So it's a Shopify app to help merchants collect more feedback and data about their customers, all built with Bubble and a big no-code fanatic.
Hi, I'm Kieran. My app is called Yep.so and it's a super fast landing page builder to help mainly indie makers test and validate ideas and launch quickly. Also built in Bubble and also a no-code fan.
And I'm Glenn. I'm not a bubbler. My predominant stack is Webflow, Xano, and various other tools to support whatever I'm building in those two tools. The big one at the moment for me is No-Code Kids. It's an initiative to get the learning about no-code into schools and potentially into, soon hope to be, into the home as well. So we can deliver this as a course for families that actually don't get access to this in the school, but would like to get access to it at home. As I say, building Webflow, building Xano, and we're rebuilding at the moment with a new tool called Wizd. So I'll just touch on that a little bit later on. Right, guys. So diving straight into it. Now, we've got a couple of topics that we want to discuss today. I thought we would just do a quick review of where we're up to with our respective businesses. Just to start off, just a very quick recap. We don't have to go into too much depth. But Kieran, would you want to go first and just talk about how you've been doing?
Yeah, things are going okay. I haven't really shipped any big features or done any marketing or anything like that. But I'm definitely in the last month, I'm seeing an uptick in usage of the app. I'm getting more and more notifications on my phone, so much so that I might have to actually switch some of them off. And MRR is, you know, increasing fairly well without me doing much. But obviously when it's a $10 a month product, it still doesn't go anywhere very fast. But yeah, things are going okay.
That's great. Just on that one, I used to work in a team where we had a Shopify store launch and everybody had the app on their phone. And as soon as the sales started coming in and everybody's phones were going ding, 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 it was really exciting for about an hour. And then everybody turned off those, driving everybody crazy. But that's kind of nice feedback, isn't it?
Yeah.
And James, over to you.
Yes, I guess I've had a busy couple of weeks. I've been working on a couple of topics that we spoke about previously. So one of them was launching an SDK effectively for my app that effectively means it would no longer just be for Shopify stores. So I've noticed lots of people trying to sign up over the last year really and give up because they're not on Shopify. And I think that was kind of coming out of the increased focus that I'd been doing on SEO. So there was more traffic coming through that wasn't just from the Shopify app store. And I kind of wanted to address that by making the app available to more people. So that's done now and it's going to launch probably next week, which is going to be quite a big step really, because it's a big change to the application to support and anything else other than Shopify. Because for the last year and a half, it's just been Shopify. So that's been a big change. But yeah, I've been also thinking about quite a bit about the pricing of the application. I've had some feedback from customers about the tier limits, and I know we've spoken about that before, and that's something that I am going to take action on now. So the plan is at the moment to remove all of the tier limits that are usage based and make it purely feature gated pricing. So I was kind of concerned that with my pricing, it was pushing people. Yeah, it's priced on the amount of responses that you got. And that didn't always sit well with me because I wanted to motivate people to get as many responses as they can, not to be worried, oh, I'm going to get too many. So yeah, those are a couple of the changes I've been thinking about over the last couple of weeks.
So that's really interesting, actually. Can I pick up a couple of things there? So the usage limit thing, first of all, I think a lot of people think about that partly to help with moving people from one tier to another. So that's something that you're just removing. You're just saying, I'm not going to have that as a barrier. That's not an incentivizing thing to do to get people from one tier to another. It's going to be feature focused, which I think is a really interesting idea. Are you worried at all about the impact of that on your costs or on anything else? Did you use that partly to sort of manage costs? Or?
Yeah, and I mean, that is the concern. My email bill has been going up month over month quite a lot by because the volume of emails going through the app is increasing. And having those tier limits in there were kind of a hedge against that. I mean, the thing was, I never actually enforced those limits. So they're not really enforced now. So it's more of a positioning thing. I think maybe as a safeguard, I might need some kind of fair usage policy just to cover me against someone who wants to send out like millions of emails. There's no way I could cover that. So some kind of sensible fair use policy. I mean, the other option I had considered was pricing based on the number of orders that a store had had. But again, there were some edge cases around that with users I already have where they do a lot of free orders. So maybe it's like a digital download or something like that. And that doesn't seem fair to really count those. So I'm going to give it a go without the kind of usage-based element to it. But yeah, it's definitely a concern about the cost. Particularly with email, that's where my biggest cost, like variable cost, is with the app. Everything else is really quite fixed within Bubble and all the other services. So it really is that email element. So I'm kind of going to see how it goes, really. But yeah, it's something customers have been messaging me through the app and saying is that they don't like that usage limit on it. Just as even people were getting anxious just about sending a single test email that was coming out of their allowance. And I was like, it doesn't really, you know, if you go over your allowance, it isn't actually monitored. But it was just a thing that people are obviously conscious of. So, yeah, it feels like the right thing to remove that, especially as when I know they're all, you know, merchants are certainly more and more conscious of what they're spending on apps at the moment. So, yeah, it's going to be another pricing experiment, I guess.
Are you removing it on the free plan or just the paid ones?
So I will remove it on all of the plans, but the free plan is very heavily limited on what you can actually do in terms of like the number of questions you can ask and things like that.
Okay.
But there is a question that is also arises out of this is, do I want to continue having a free plan? And that is going to be kind of monitored ongoing. At the moment, I think it still makes sense. The only reason I would stop the free plan or heavily limit it is around it, which may be a consideration. So it might limit it to like 100 emails or something like that, just to try it out effectively, and then no limits on any other plan. But I think the thing that has driven the most upgrades for me from free to paid and people moving up the tiers has been features. So all that feature gating around if you want to add a discount or if you want to add loads of questions or use the question like library or anything like that, it's all extra, and that's what's driven people up. I don't think all my prompts in the app of "you're over your allowance" have really driven people to upgrade that much. It all does go red, but people just carry on using it, so that wasn't really driving people to upgrade for me. So yeah, it'll be interesting to, you know, see how it goes down, really.
It sounds like another great experiment, James. I mean, How do you both feel about how SaaS companies, ourselves now, I guess, included, handle things like this? Because sometimes they sort of come out of nowhere. And when it's something that you get a benefit from like this, then it's like, great, I'm suddenly do unlimited X. But then if you decide that that's not working out and you have to remove that again, that's the flip side, isn't it? It's like, oh, I'm suddenly getting a restriction put in here. Is there a argument to say the experiment could be run behind like a promotion? So could you say, I'm going to run this for the month of January as just a New Year deal or something like that for all users, and just see what kind of response that gets. And then you've got that ability to withdraw it easily should you need to, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, that I think that's definitely so. And I have built in the ability to do custom plans because it has come up more and more with people wanting to do multiple stores and all that kind of stuff. So there is like the coupon code kind of ability in there. So that might be a really nice way to test the waters. But the other thing I don't do, because I hate it when other companies do it, is I don't change the pricing for existing customers. There's a few reasons for that. Like, first of all, with Shopify's billing system, you can't anyway. So once someone's approved a charge, unless they re-auth and re-approve a new charge, you can't just change what they're paying. So in general, I've never increased prices for people on legacy plans and things like that. Yeah, so it's an interesting one to monitor.
I've never done that either, but sometimes I think that maybe we should, maybe that we're not doing it, not for the right reasons. We're not doing it because we're a bit afraid and we want to be, you know, nice founders, but then all these big companies will just happily put up the price for millions of customers almost overnight. And yeah, I think with, you know, with the state of the economy and inflation and things like that, I think it is entirely reasonable to put the prices up. But there's a lot of unknowns that come with that. You don't know what effect it will have. You don't know how much to put it up and how many of your customers might walk away if you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe we should move on to that topic, because that's one of the big topics we wanted to move on to, actually, wasn't it? We're going to have to hold your big news back for a second, Kieran, while we deal with this one. I know you're itching to tell everybody, but I'm going to make everybody wait. So economy-wise, obviously, recession, we're in another one. It's going to go on. It's unavoidable. What do we do as founders to actually decrease the stress and help us through this period of time? It could be anything. I mean, not just pricing experimentation, for example, but, you know, what else can we do to actually get through this period? So I'm going to leave that quite open. Who'd like to, I'll go first with that.
Well, I've had some thoughts. I mean, it's very tempting to just kind of assume that things are going to be okay for us, because, you know, I can easily do the mental gymnastics to argue that, you know, more people are going to be unemployed or struggling for cash, and they're going to want to start side projects, and then they're going to find Yep, and they're going to be like, yes, I'll test my ideas so that I can, you know, start a side business and earn some more to pay my exorbitant energy bills. Obviously, I'm not basing that on any actual data. It's just kind of wishful thinking. But you could probably say the same about Shopify stores. Perhaps more people will be trying to start Shopify stores and going independent to make ends meet, and maybe you'll get more custom that way. But on the other hand, as you said, Glenn, people are a lot more careful with their spending, and are probably less likely to upgrade to a paid plan on anything. And certainly I have been cancelling a lot of the subscriptions that I had, and cancelling a lot of the bubble projects that I've been paying for ages, which haven't actually got any users, just to try and minimize my costs as much as possible. So I imagine other people will be doing the same. So yeah, I don't have any answers, but personally, I'm definitely looking at like how I can diversify my income stream. Yep is certainly only a very small part of, you know, well, I don't rely on it at all. It's just a small amount of money that's kind of a nice to have that's just about covering its costs. So I would never rely on it. But if I did have a SaaS where that was my number one source of income, then yeah, certainly I'd be quite concerned, and I'd be looking at other ways that I could earn some money to just diversify.
And we talked about the spread of small bets idea from before in a previous episode, Kieran, and that you've been doing that. So I'd be interested to know how that develops for you over the months ahead, as to whether you sort of double down on certain ideas which you feel have some traction already, and you think I can get more out of these because I've been testing stuff out and I now know what I need to focus on. Or do you double down on the spread and you actually say, I'm going to do more of these and like really try and, as you said, diversify, and hopefully that will increase the income. So I'm really following that carefully, because I think a lot of people are wondering which direction they should take, especially now. So I don't know what your thoughts are, James. Obviously, you're in a slightly different situation. You've got this main product of yours, which is doing well, could be doing obviously really, really, really well. So where do you sit with this? How do you feel about the direction you're going to take over the next 6 months, a year, 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think from like immediate term, one of the things I've been doing is just really going through every single cost. I imagine like every other business, SaaS or otherwise, looking at every line item and thinking, do I really need that? And cancelling loads of SaaS and stuff that I had that I wasn't really getting the most out of. And I suspect a lot of businesses of all sizes are going to be doing that. So that's kind of also what's driven me to think about some of the changes in my own product, about, hey, you know, how can I be more less likely to get kicked off the, you know, the list that people have. So yeah, in the short term, it's been really, how can I get to the position where the, you know, it's default alive is the most important thing. So I think, you know, recessions are tremendous opportunities. You know, some of the greatest companies we know were started in the middle of last recession or the one before that. Often it is actually a very good time to get started. So if you can survive it and keep your costs lean and, you know, price competitively relative to maybe competitors, you've got much more fixed costs and tons of employees and expensive software stacks and all that stuff. I do think it is an interesting time to be in no code in particular because of the, you know, the cost dynamics of it is radically different from a traditional SaaS. So I think, yeah, it's for me, it's keeping the cost low, representing good value in the product to the merchants so that, you know, it is something that they feel that they want to keep. And yeah, I think there is a lot of room for growth over the next kind of 2 years as so much flux is going to be happening. You know, people are going to be switching tools, switching jobs. Lots of stuff is changing. So there is a lot of opportunity. But yeah, for me, the most important thing is keep, you know, default alive, make sure the company can keep going no matter what happens. Because yeah, I think just getting through the next few years is going to put you ahead of a lot of other companies who aren't going to get through because of much bigger costs and stuff. So yeah, that's what I've been kind of thinking about from that perspective.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. We didn't have the benefits of no-code, arguably, in that last recession. This movement certainly wasn't a thing then. We have that opportunity now, not just as makers ourselves to help secure our financial futures, but also to enable that for others. And I think that's a really key part of this, isn't it? You're doing it from a Shopify app point of view, James. You're saying, look, I can help your business here in terms of, you know, securing your future. You're coming from a different point of view there, Kieran, where you're saying, well, you've now got some ideas where you want to test out some side hustles. You're going to make a shift. You want to actually try something new, something different, a little bit like it was during lockdown, you know, where people were furloughed or had been laid off and they were at home. And, you know, a similar kind of feel to that almost. From my side, it's more, well, what can I do in terms of education? Can I get more content out there, more courses, other things where I could perhaps cater to the market of people who are needing to learn and learn really rapidly. So they're coming to no-code quite quickly, or they're looking to level up with their no-code skills, and they're taking one of their ideas to the next level because, as you say, James, now's the time to be doing it. So three different approaches, but all catering to the same, you know, the same end. And I just really like what I'm hearing here, because it's like, rather than being negative about this and just focusing on reducing costs, let's look at the positive side of this. How can we actually help people? What are the pain points for them? What are they struggling with? What will they be struggling with? How can we actually help them get through as well? Not just how can we get through ourselves? I think when we start to turn inwards looking and thinking just about ourselves and our business, etc., you've kind of lost that focus, the focus being the mission that you're trying to achieve in the first place. So that's really good advice for all of us. But I think we're going to keep dipping in and out of this particular topic actually throughout the rest of this episode. But Kieran, let's move over to your big news, because based on what we've just said and the fact that everybody's feeling this, you've made a big decision and it can potentially be impacted by the recession. Do you want to make that announcement for people?
Yeah, so last week was my last day at my day job. So now I'm officially full-time no-code freelancer and indie maker. I'm very excited. I'm a lot more excited than my voice makes it sound. This is the way I just talk. But yeah, I've been wanting to do this for quite a long time, you know, ever since I discovered no-code. I've been itching to just spend more time doing it because I'm absolutely addicted to building stuff and hanging out on Twitter and things like that. And yeah, it just, things just came to a head and I was just thinking, I've got to do it because my kids are at an age now, well, my oldest is going to be going to school next September. So I really want to spend more time with them before she's off to school every day and, you know, to maybe do a bit of traveling or go on some holidays and things like that. So I was like, I've got to do it now. And I spoke to my business partner and we agreed that I would, yeah, just take a step back from the business. It's a sabbatical for a year and then we're going to see what happens after that. But I figure like a year is a good chunk of time that will allow me to, you know, really just try some new stuff and see what happens if I actually get to focus on these things. And yeah, it's an unpaid sabbatical, by the way. So I am genuinely going to be trying to make ends meet by primarily doing bubble freelancing, which I'd never really done before. or never done at all. But from what I've seen so far, it seems like it is a way that you can make a living. So that's going to be like my number one source of income, at least to start with. And then I'm also working on a few other things like education content around Bubble, recording courses and tutorials. I think, you know, as we're saying, as things change because of the recession, I think a lot of people will be looking to change career or at least increase their skill set, and the demand to learn Bubble is ever increasing. So now that I have like more time and working from home, I just feel like I have more opportunity to focus on recording courses and getting that content out there. So yeah, it's really exciting. I've got loads of ideas for things I want to do, and I'm just hoping I don't end up like wittering away the time just on social media and stuff like that, or just making cups of tea.
No, that's awesome. And you know, congratulations from both of us, because I think, you know, as we've discussed in previous episodes, knowing when to do, you know, make that change is really hard decision. But yeah, I think I think it's a great time to do it. And that's, you know, everything we see and everything we talk about every week, you know, in the no-code ecosystem points in one direction, that, you know, it is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and more people want to get involved. So I think it's a really good, you know, a really good decision. I'm really excited to follow what happens next.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good time in terms of no-code, but it seems like a terrible time in terms of everything else. And certainly, yeah, that's added to my worries. Am I making the biggest mistake ever doing this at a time when we're going into recession and energy prices and cost of living crisis and everything like that? So yeah, to be determined, but I just feel good about making this move.
So I'll echo what James says, but a number of things here. First of all, publicly saying congratulations from me as well, Kieran. You've got us behind you. You've got a huge community behind you, not just, you know, the Bubble community, but the whole no-code community, you know. So I think that one of the things that I get out of being in this community as a whole is how supportive everybody is of each other. I think sometimes you just need a bit of moral support. Sometimes you need some technical help. Sometimes you need a partner on a project. It's just so abundant, I think, in our particular community. So I'm sure you guys are the same. Incredibly grateful that I chose this path over the past few years and not another one. And just the longer I'm in it, the better it gets, which is just astonishing. You know, it doesn't become jaded. It seems people are just genuinely excited to be here. So hopefully that's all going to help to lift you and carry you along. But you are under no illusion that there's going to be a lot of hard work that has to go into this, I'm sure. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I'm going to put the advert out there for you, because I know how modest you are. People, anybody listening to this, you would be really lucky to have Kieran doing your Bubble work for you, or doing a Bubble work with you. So I'm going to say that on his behalf. I know he's already got projects on. I don't know how busy you are, Kieran, but I'm going to do the advert. So I don't know, how would people contact you if they wanted to see if they could work with you?
Yeah, just DM me on Twitter, or Kieran, Kieran at nocodelife.com. That will get to me. Yeah, really interested to hear about everyone's Bubble projects. I have, through one tweet, I managed to find two of my first freelance clients who only require like a few hours a week. And they're both really great. They both built their own Bubble app. So they have an app. Well, no, sorry. One of them built their own Bubble app. One of them hired someone to build it. So they both have their apps up and working, and they just need someone to come in and like maybe restructure and add new features and just help them to streamline things. So I'm really enjoying that, because they're both really cool apps as well to be working on. But yeah, I'm definitely interested to hear from more people. And yeah, also I'm learning a ton more now about Bubble, so that I can make sure that I'm giving the best advice to people.
That's awesome. Thanks, Kieran. The last thing I wanted to say about that was there are a number of different approaches to this, isn't there? As you're coming into a time where you could do anything with your time, I wanted to just sort of dwell on that a little bit. So we've got a model that we use internally, which is this idea of done for you, done with you, and do it yourself. And just loosely just describing what we see each of those as being, as three different strands to an offering, your offering. The done for you is a bit obvious. That's like the agency work we do, where we have a project, you pay the money, and we just build the whole thing and deliver it. That could be MVPs, it could be websites, web apps, consultancy, that kind of realm. As part of that as well, we've got collaboration. So this could be where we're working with somebody else on a project jointly, or it could be a joint venture or initiative or something like that. So that's another one that you can do. The done with you is then more the coaching. So this could definitely fall into your remit, I think, is where you're saying, look, there's an hourly rate. These are my slots open to me during the week. If you're lucky enough to get one, you pay up front, you book it, and we'll do anything you want to do during that hour, you know, 2 hours or however many hours it is, which is a really great way to get in small amounts of money, but regularly, which can be a really good little sort of way to help with cash flow. And then the do-it-yourself is the more lengthy aspirational stuff with the courses. And because you're already thinking about mini courses or the mini course deliverer, you know, the app deliverer of mini courses, and you could be creating your own mini courses. I'm really interested to see what you come up with there, because there's a lot of bubble people out there, but I don't always see a huge number of bubble courses coming out all the time. I don't know whether that's because everybody does the same ones, but I would be shocked if that is all wrapped up. You know, I think that there's probably lots of scope for particular courses. I mean, for example, does somebody teach how to build a micro SaaS with Bubble specifically, or if they do, specifically around a particular topic or using a particular set of tools or what? So I mean, there's so much scope here. So I'm just curious as to know, how do you feel about that kind of done for you, done with you, and do it yourself as a model to map out your plans?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, obviously the ultimate goal for me, as it is for many indie makers, is to divorce my time from my earnings. So the done for you and the done with you both would mean I would be getting paid for my time, which is at this stage absolutely fine. And I really, really actually enjoy collaborating with people and showing them the things I know and working together on an app. I find that really satisfying. And I think it's one of the unique things about no code is that you can have a client, but you can also teach them how to use the tool and how to do things themselves. And then over time, they will be able to just take it off you and say, yeah, this is great. I can now maintain my own app. So I think that's kind of a magical thing to be able to teach and build at the same time. So I'm definitely keen to do some of that. I'm also going to be doing some of the done for you stuff, pure like freelancing, where I'm actually going to do some work with AirDev, hopefully. So I'll be working through one of their product managers. So I'll never have contact with the client, but I'll be building the apps in the background. And they're really good because they can provide consistent work every month. So you can pretty much guarantee that you're going to have an income. So that's really important. But then, yeah, ultimately, I would like to be creating more of this DIY content, because once you make a course and put it out there, it can continue to bring in income, you know, even years after. So me and Pablo made our Bubble course back in, I want to say, was it 2020? And yeah, it's still like we've made $400 this week from it. And it's getting to the point now where it's quite out of date. It was done in before Bubble brought in their new responsive engine. So we're both like, we've kind of stopped promoting it, and we're talking about making a new version of it. But yeah, these things, they do continue on in the ether for a long time. So yeah, I feel like there's loads of opportunity. Although there are fantastic courses out there, there's still only a handful of people who are making decent courses. And I think, yeah, as they say, like, people prefer to learn from different kinds of people. And just because all the same material might exist in other formats, if someone likes learning from you, they will be interested in following your stuff.
Yeah. And once they've actually enjoyed one of your courses, the likelihood of them then wanting to buy something else is there, isn't it? So you've got that cross-selling opportunity to say, great, now that we've covered the basics here, now let's go deeper and we're going to look at a much more advanced aspect. And then once you've done that, we're going to go and do another one. So you've got potentially the ability to sell two or three different things. I think we were saying before about bundling as well. You know, as soon as you've got a few of these available, you can offer a, you know, 3 for 2 or 20% off if you buy all three or whatever it might be. So I think there's just so much opportunity with courses these days that we should all be doing it to some degree, even if we've only got smallish type of courses out there. We've all got so much to pass on that I feel almost irresponsible if I'm not, because I've taken the time to do this and I've saved. I could save somebody else a huge headache and a lot of hours just by putting it together and putting it in front of them, as opposed to, you know, just the thought of everybody struggling as much as I've struggled to get on top of everything to get to the point I'm up to. Yeah, it's almost like a no-brainer, isn't it? So where will you start with that then? What do you think?
What, in terms of the courses?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, so well, actually today I've been working on my first course, which I'm doing for Buildcamp, and it's about structuring your bubble database, because of all the few videos I've done before, the most popular one I made was about how to structure your bubble database, and that's just like a free one on YouTube. So I wrote like a really long script, expanded on that, put in loads more detail, learned a load of stuff myself, stuff that I didn't know before, which I now do, which is great. And then, yeah, I'm trying to put together a really comprehensive course, and I've been deep in recording it today and not enjoying trying to talk to camera and all that stuff, which I find really difficult. But yeah, that's kind of something you need to practice. But yeah, that's the first thing. And then I think next I'll make another course for Buildcamp, and I might focus on micro SaaS because that's the thing I've done the most of. So I might just start making courses on how to do different kinds of SaaS products and just see how that goes.
And of course, validating all your ideas with yep.so, so you'll know which ones people really want you to do.
Yeah, exactly. I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good idea.
All feeds in. Anything to add to that, James?
No, I'm excited to follow that course myself on the database structure, because I know that is one of the trickiest things with Bubble to get right, and I've had to change mine several times along the way. But yeah, no, I think I echo it completely. You know, I think there's a lot of room out there for more content around Bubble. You know, while the community is super helpful and friendly, like often you do have to ask to find answers for things. There isn't always just, you know, a written answer or a video or docs or whatever around it. So yeah, I think the more content out there, the better. It's great to get more people building with this. I think that's, you know, what all of our goals with No Code is, get more people into the tent because it's such a massive, you know, it's such a game changer technology. And as we've saying, next few years, particularly relevant. It's just a skill that I think everyone should have, you know, the ability to go and build your own app, whether it's for managing your shopping list or who's going to take the bins out or whatever it is. It's like, if the power to be able to build something like that is really freeing, and it's really exciting. So the more people that can build stuff, the better, I think, in any way.
Yeah. And just as a quick anecdote about that. So I said to my friend the other day, he's a coder, and he keeps asking me if I've got any projects for him because he just wants to like increase his skill set. And so I said to him, could you build a very simple app that will take in one of my video courses and will output a transcript in the form of kind of like a blog post, but also enable me to add in thumbnails or images from the video? And he just, like a week later, he just came back to me and said, yeah, what do you think of this? And he showed it to me, and I just got that feeling of excitement when you first see a piece of technology where you're like, oh my God, this is so cool. Because it literally, he uploaded one of my tutorials. It output a really decent transcript, like quite nicely formatted. And then he had this thing where you just scrub through the video and then click make image, and you just do it, and it'll automatically insert it into the right bit in the transcript. So then you can just copy and paste it into Notion, which we did. And it just looked like a blog post, and it's going to, you know, create so much SEO juice because it's got all the words that I spoke during like a half hour video. And I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. But he was just able to do that with, you know, within a week in his spare time, just like Googling stuff and looking on Stack Overflow of how to do this. And yeah, it could save so many people so much time.
I said two things on that. It's making me laugh. One is, I'd imagine everybody listening to this right now is saying, where is it? What's it called? Where's the tool? I want to buy it. You know, how many of us would want to be able to do that? Right? So that's the first thing. And yeah, the second thing is just like, maybe you could do that with no code still as well. I mean, he's coding it, right? So that's you're obviously going to be able to do it with code. But there's also great APIs and other things out there that could actually enable you to do that with no code. So that would be interesting to find out. But I'm seeing a lot of these kinds of tools for helping with video and transcription, and you know, obviously AI is playing a big part in everything these days. They're all exploding on the scene, aren't they? So it's gonna, yeah. Let us know how that goes, Kira. I'd love to see an example of that. Sure you would as well, James. And just definitely, you might be thinking about including that in your product, even for the micro courses, you know, the daily, if you're going to continue that one. So yeah, It's just, it feels so good. I feel like your manager today, Kieran, because everything that you're doing feels like it's coming together. You know, you've been working at so many different things for a while and they're all coming together. And I'm going to mention one last one before we let James speak, which is you've got this new community idea as well. Do you want to talk about that today? Because everything being community led and community focused, it seems like the right time to mention that as well.
Yeah, well, I just had an idea for a community for no code SaaS founders like ourselves, because I just think it's still such a new thing. And there are tons of communities for SaaS builders who are using code. But when you're doing it with no code, you have a unique set of challenges and doubts and fears, because you are almost by definition not the most technical person, and you potentially have no experience in selling any kind of software product before, and now you're suddenly in a situation where you can build software and then turn it into a business. And I think there's just so many complexities that come with that it would be great to have some kind of community of people who are doing the same. And I know that there's a fair few people within the no-code community who are doing that, but everyone seems to be doing it in their own kind of silos. Like, this podcast is really one of the only things I can think of that's specifically focused on SaaS built with no code. But I think in a few years' time, it's going to be huge. And so many people are going to have, you know, gone from just being an accountant or whatever to having a SaaS product that they are trying to sell to other accountants or something like that. So having a community is always just a great way to bring people together and help kind of raise all boats together and get people learning from each other. So that's my idea. I'm not sure exactly what format it's going to take, but I have some thoughts on the kind of sessions and things like that I'd like to do, including, most importantly, one where we all have to do marketing together.
Wonderful. That's a huge amount from you, Kieran. Thank you for that. And I encourage everybody who may not be following you yet or following what you're doing, now's the time, because I think you're going to be generating a lot of interesting stuff for this community over the next few months. Anything more from you, James? I know that you wanted to touch on Xano a little bit today. Should we dive into that one? Because it could, as we said before in the last episode, it could be a huge topic in an episode in itself. However, I'm also interested to see whether you've dived into that at all since we last spoke.
Yeah, I guess I'll touch on it, but I think, like you say, it probably does warrant an in-depth discussion, I guess. Yeah, so I think coming out of the previous episode, one of the things I was trying to solve for is getting more and more records in my database in Bubble, which is, you know, Bubble does absolutely everything for me at the moment. And for some of the bigger users of the system, the analytics in particular were getting a bit slow when trying to do calculations over, you know, tens of thousands of records to calculate statistics and stuff like that, which kind of then prompted me to think, you know, should I be looking outside Bubble, another database technology? And then I went and had a play around with Superbase and Xano, both of them. And unfortunately, I couldn't actually get along with them. They weren't no code enough for me. It seemed like you needed to know how to write SQL pretty much to be able to use them, which I can't. So at the moment, I'm a bit back to the drawing board on that one. And my kind of short-term plan is to increase my capacity on Bubble to try and speed things up a bit or get someone to come and help me. But yeah, maybe I'm just too used to Bubble's database now and how easy it is to use and how abstracted a lot of the underlying technology is. But yeah, I unfortunately couldn't get my head around Xano or Superbase, really. I could get something quite basic working, but yeah, the API calls and stuff, I don't know if it was the documentation or whatever, but I couldn't really get my head around it. And it really did just make me, you know, think again of how great the Bubble database actually is, you know, and how that has enabled the product to exist at all. Because if I had, this is where I've always, in the past when I've tried to build stuff with no code, that would be where I would fall down. I just could not get the database to work, or I didn't understand the syntax of it and all of that. And I think it's something I'm going to have to invest a bit more time into to really understand, or get someone to work with me and take it over. But I do still kind of want to have a grasp of how it works. So that one's kind of a bit more on the back burner now as a research / what am I going to do with this kind of thing. So I'm not 100% decided. It still needs solving, but in the short term I'm planning to kind of increase the bubble capacity a bit to speed things up. But I know that, you know, as the app keeps growing, that isn't going to last forever. So a solution does need to be found. But maybe after watching Kieran's course on database optimization, I might be able to get it working a bit better in bubbles. So we'll see. But yeah, bit of an update on where what I've been up to with that.
Well, I am actually going to cover using an external database versus Bubbles database, not through my own experience, but I had a call with JJ Englert, who's a bit of an expert when it comes to using things like Xano. And he essentially said, yeah, echoes your experience that if you want to use something like Xano, you get a lot more power and flexibility, but you also have to make a lot of decisions that Bubble already makes for you. And you really do need to kind of know some code and things like that to do it. So he actually said, spoiler alert, you should still watch my course, but he actually said that unless there is a really specific reason that you need an external database, like, for example, you are trying to link together three Bubble apps with one database, then he said Bubble's database should serve you completely fine, should be fine. And he's seen them running with millions of workflows and working perfectly. The only thing he said that Xano does much faster is if you're trying to make changes to tens of thousands of different things in the database, you know, at the same time or very quickly. He said it's much faster for things like that. But if you have your database, your Bubble database structured well, then there's no reason it should be slowing up even for quite large flows.
That's good to know. So I think there is some work to do there. And one thing I have done before, and I have written about, which I've used in Bubble for these kind of use cases before, is having a completely separate table with kind of calculated metrics in it that are generated by the back end. So, you know, once an hour or whatever, it will do the calculation and then just store the result in a field that is then instantly readable by the front end and things like that. So I'd be interested, yeah, to learn a bit more about that from your course and see if I can do those strategies a bit more. And, you know, I think wherever possible, I want to keep things in Bubble. There's only very limited external services that I use where there's no other option, basically. So if there is a way of getting it to work in Bubble, I think I want to definitely try and get it going.
It sounds like you two are going to get on top of this. And again, sharing that with a lot of other people who are probably either experiencing the same or will be heading towards this as their apps grow. We said this before, didn't we, that we're at that stage now where we're past the early stages of app building and people have been established a little while and they've had some good growth. And we're starting to reach some of those boundaries of some of these tools and what they can and can't do. So fascinating to hear both of those things. Let us know, Kieran, in due course, obviously on here and elsewhere when that's available. But I'd imagine it's going to take a bit of effort together.
Yeah, it will.
So just my experience on that one, James, obviously, just to echo what I was saying earlier, people will come forward and show you things like Xano at the drop of a hat. You know, I will. I'm happy to sit with you for an hour and just go through what I love about Xano, partly because I think when you fall in love with a tool, you want to pass that on, don't you? You want other people to sort of get that as well and enjoy that as well. So feel free to call on me and we'll sit through and go through something. As you know from this podcast, actually, I've been doing this video diary. I feel like I go on about it a lot, but it's one of those sort of background projects which I'm really enjoying. So I'm happy to talk about it, which is using Xano's power and bringing that into a web app build in Webflow, using this new version of WSD version 2. And a lot more people are getting on to WSD now. We had the Webflow Cont, which was just last week. Feels like ages ago already, but it was just last week. An incredible success. I couldn't go. I really wanted to go. I couldn't go this year. But everybody that didn't go had massive FOMO about the whole thing. It was just a huge event in the industry. Really, really buoyant. Everybody really happy to be there. You could just see from the videos and the photos and everything. So anyway, WSD is very much a part of that. Being part of the FinSuite family, WSD is going to just pick up steam. More and more and more and more and more people are going to start realizing that they can build their own web apps now using Webflow. And there is no inherent database behind WSD, so it's agnostic. And therefore, it connects to Xano, Superbase, Firebase, and potentially any backend. Webflow collections can still be used. So there's a database behind Webflow as such is collections. So they can still be used if you like, but things like Xano are picking up a lot of interest. And you can see people, a bit like your situation, James, you see people saying, right, I know I need to get onto this. I know perhaps Airtable is not going to give me everything I need, or maybe it's going to restrict me somewhat within a short period of time. So how do I just sort of bypass that stage and go straight to the so-called professional backend stage? And Xano is just sitting there waiting for that. But I know what you mean. The videos aren't necessarily going to onboard you easily. You're going through a particular course or something that takes you from beginning to end with Xano. I totally hear you on that, to the point where on my recession-proof plan, I have a Xano 101 course actually to do, because I'm realizing, going through this process myself, where I'm quite comfortable with the tool, there are a lot of concepts in there which people aren't necessarily going to be comfortable with. So it's one of those situations, and I'm sure you're going to feel this, Kieran, you have done before, where you know a lot more than you think you know. And it's only when you actually start putting these things together that you think, oh yeah, and then there's that, and then there's that, and oh, actually, they really need to know that. I mean, we strayed into, in this diary, we strayed into relational database design kind of accidentally, because you start to talk about relationships between two tables and people start to say, well, why would you do it like that? What does that mean? And why have you used that particular situation there, but not there? And you kind of go, yeah, well, that's experience that's done that. And I've assumed that everybody might have that, but of course you don't. So you've got to then go into these little offshoots and talk about stuff that's related. So yeah, that's all we'll say about Xano today. I think we're coming up to our time anyway, but is there any closing remarks, anything that we've said today that I feel really inspired by today's episode? I have to say, I hope people have felt some of the really positive things that have come out of this. I think this is a really exciting time. We're heading up towards Christmas, which I know is a bit of a slowdown, but I think we can all gather ourselves and figure out what we're going to do for next year. Yeah, closing remarks, guys.
I think, yeah, from me, as we've said, no code community is amazing. Everyone's so supportive. I think we've all just got to remember not to get too hung up on all the doom and gloom that is around, and remember that actually this is a really exciting time if you look at the fundamentals of, you know, the technology and what you can do with it. Forget all the negativity you hear. It is a great time to get into this now. You're still in the right at the beginning of the hockey stick, I think. It's not really even at like 5% of where it will be in kind of 10 years, even a couple of years away, I think. So it's still a great time to get started. So yeah, I think I've been super inspired by both your guys' stories this and Kieran in particular this week with making the jump. You know, I think it's a really exciting time. So yeah, no, I think that's my last soundbite, I guess, on it.
Yeah, just echoing what you said about the community. I mean, I think it's highly unlikely that I would have made this jump were it not for the Twitter no code community and seeing other people doing the same, and just, you know, knowing that there's that kind of supportive community out there has really made a huge difference to me making this, you know, big decision. So yeah, I'm super grateful for that. I love talking about all this stuff, and I'm just really excited that, you know, 2023 is coming up and we're going to have, you know, probably unrecognizable businesses by this time next year. And it'll just be, it's such a good time to be in it, despite everything. And as long as Twitter doesn't implode, then all is going to be good in the no code world. But otherwise, I'll see you all on LinkedIn.
Don't joke, Kieran, don't joke. Honestly, that was going to be my closing remark as well, to the Twitter implosion. I think what I'm getting out of it is, last few minutes, the posts that I see where people say, why would you bet against Elon? Are definitely the ones that I support. You know, he's taken stuff against the odds, massively against the odds, and look what he's done. So I'm definitely in it for the long haul. I'm quite happy to pay even more money per month if he needs it. But ultimately, there are a lot of people saying, well, if this suddenly implodes tomorrow, how do we all find each other? And there's people flooding onto Mastodon servers and all kinds of things. And it's almost like, We need a bit of a no-code Twitter community kind of collaboration here to make sure that we don't all just suddenly lose each other, because we take it for granted that Twitter's always going to be there, and hopefully it will. But how can you coordinate that effort, you know? So some people have said, oh, I'm doing a clone and I'm doing this and come and find me over here. But it almost needs somebody to say, everybody, just come here and put your details in so we don't like lose touch. But yeah, I'm just closing thoughts on that one.
Yeah. Don't know what to do. I mean, there's like Slack groups and things like that, like 100 Days of No Code has a pretty large Slack and no-code founders and things like that. So we could all meet up on there, but I think Twitter's a bit special, isn't it? And the point is that you get new people discovering all the time, new people coming and joining, which I don't think you would get so easily on any of the other platforms, really. I don't think the discovery is quite so good. So, yeah, I'm hoping that Elon doesn't mess everything up, and he has got a good track record, although I can't imagine, you know, wanting to go anywhere near one of his rockets if he's this volatile in terms of the way he handles his employees. But I guess, you know, it has worked out. He must have some good people around him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all need Twitter to succeed. We don't really want to get stuck with the alternatives at the moment. And I think there's a lot of people willing Twitter to succeed, you know, despite all the noise and the drama, which often seems to follow Elon around. Fundamentally, I'm confident it's going to be there in 5-10 years and hopefully, you know, way better than it is today. So I think it is going to be a bumpy few months, but I'm still super optimistic that, you know, Twitter's going to come through this. You know, we all love it. Everyone who uses the product loves it. So that's the, you know, the underlying thing that's going to persist throughout all the drama, I think.
So finishing off on an optimistic note, as with everything in this episode, thanks guys. This is great. This is our first episode recorded during daylight as well, pretty much. Well, we did in the summer in the evening, but we've been doing our episodes in the evening, and now we've decided to do them in the daytime. So that's a change for us as well. So yeah, thank you both. See you next time.
Yeah, see you.
Thanks, bye.